Well, I picked up the paper yesterday, and I got really, really, really annoyed. And so last night, as I was sending my letter to the New York Times about an article that appeared both in the front of the Sunday Business of the New York Times and appeared in the Sarasota Herald, entitled, "Here's to Your Health, So They Claim, Ingredients of Shady Origins Posing as Supplements." I read this article because, of course, I'm in the supplement business. I'm in the health business, actually. Supplements are just one of the tools that I use, as well as diet and exercise and physical and mental therapies abound as recommendations in my practice. But, you know, I concentrate a lot on the biochemistry. And so this article was talking about the fact that in Chinatown, there were some potentially dangerous formulas that had showed up as retail products, health products. They might be specifically designed for weight loss. You know, all of us still want to believe that somewhere out there is that magic pill and that we're going to take that magic pill and that somehow we're going to be walking down the sidewalk and the extra weight's going to fall off on the sidewalk. There's also all sorts of products that are out there that say they give you energy, make you stronger, do various things. Well, it turns out that when they assayed these products, they found out that some of them contained amphetamines or synthetic steroids or laxatives or compounds that were in active drugs. And so the article goes on to talk about what the feds need to do about it and, you know, how you capture them at the border, since the majority of these are coming in from China, and what the Council for Responsible Nutrition is doing about it. And it's a general over-assay of vitamins, supplements, herbs. Now, legitimate manufacturers really can ensure product safety. And we teach people in my clinic about something called CGMP, Good Manufacturing Practices. GMP is a seal that a company can buy saying that they use these good manufacturing practices. It's kind of like the Good Housekeeping seal of approval. But C, and it's a lowercase c with an uppercase GMP, CGMP means that the laboratory that the nutrients are mixed and packaged in is licensed to manufacture drugs. And so when you get a product that is manufactured in a CGMP facility, you know that they have done raw materials testing. And so that means that when the ingredients get delivered, whether it's an herb, whether it's a vitamin, you know, whatever the constituent is, that all of those products are put in a quarantined area, samples of them are taken into the laboratory, and they're assayed to make sure there's no bacteria, mold, heavy metals, animal parts, or other funky things that are in the ingredients, and also to verify that they're exactly what they say they are. There is an important scientific instrument called a spectrophotometer, and when you put a sample of an herb under a spectrophotometer, it should show a certain pattern so that it indicates to you that it has all of the medicinal constituents that that herb is supposed to have. So, as an example, St. John's wort. St. John's wort, some of you have heard, is used to treat mild to moderate depression, and it's incredibly effective. St. John's wort grows right here in the state of Florida. In fact, 16 different species of St. John's wort grow here in the state of Florida, but only one of them is the medicinal St. John's wort. So if you took a sample of Hypericum, the Latin name of St. John's wort, and you put it in a spectrophotometer and it wasn't the medicinally active compound, well, then you'd know right away not to put it in your formula because it wasn't the right thing. You got delivered the wrong goods in the first place. So a CGMP laboratory is going to test raw materials. Every single ingredient that goes into that multi is going to get tested. Every single ingredient that goes into that herb is going to get tested. And so after the product is mixed, you know, I've got a multivitamin in my clinic that's got 30 different ingredients in it. So you put in B1 and B2 and B3 and B6 and B9 and B12 and all of these various things, and you put them in a great big mixer. And it will make your blender at home look puny, because these mixers are usually about 10 feet tall and about 4 feet in diameter. And you put all these ingredients into the mixer, and then you mix all these things together, and then it goes to the capsule floor, and then all of those powders come out and get put into a capsule. And so capsules are pulled out of the line and sent back to the laboratory and assayed again to make sure that nothing contaminated them while they were being manufactured, and also that the mix is right. You know, that if it says it's got 50 milligrams of vitamin B in the pill, it's got 50 milligrams of that B vitamin in the pill, and not 100 or 150. So this was the other point that they made in the article yesterday, was that some things that were tested had twice as much as they said or half as much as they said. And essentially their recommendation was to buy nationally recognized brands. And the members of the Council for Responsible Nutrition, that's a trade group in Washington, but it represents supplement manufacturers and ingredient suppliers, and they're very interested in protecting the public. So at a CGMP laboratory, the third thing that's done is that that product is sent to an independent laboratory and assayed again, so that we make sure that what's on the label and what's in the pill are the same thing. So there is no better assurance you can have than to buy from a company that is using a CGMP laboratory for manufacturing. Second choice, a GMP laboratory, which also has very good criteria, but it's not certified to manufacture drugs, so it doesn't come under the higher directives of drug manufacturing. So yes, there's stuff out there that is bad news. There are things that are either deliberately contaminated or are accidentally contaminated. And by the way, that's not just supplements, that's also drugs. You know, we've had several recalls of drugs that were contaminated here in the United States, including a blood thinning drug like heparin that, you know, created a lot of danger very quickly. And so the fact that you buy from a major manufacturer is not the only assurance, because Centrum, which is the most frequently sold vitamin that exists in the United States, in my opinion, is a very poor product in terms of nutrient repletion. I don't mean to imply that there's anything dangerous about a Centrum, but from a nutritionist standpoint, both the ingredients and the doses are somewhat naive as far as prevention is concerned. And to say, well, if you just buy from a major chain, then you're not going to deal with any of these fringe products, well, that's not the case, because GNC in the vitamin shop had a brand called Star Caps in their stores several years ago, and they found out that it had a powerful diuretic in it. And so it was pulled from their shelves. So they used corporate responsibility to pull it from their shelves, but they didn't use corporate responsibility when they put it on their shelves in the first place. So adulterated products were sold even through really good chains like the Vitamin Shoppe and GNC. So when we look at all of this information, the thing that really ticked me off was the point where they started talking about death. And so I will quote exactly from the article. I quote, "Some of these products, according to the FDA, contained amphetamines, synthetic steroids, laxatives, and compounds like the active drug in Viagra. Officials say such products can cause heart attacks and strokes, can damage the kidney and the liver. A few people in the United States, they say, have died after taking them." Close quote. That's the one that really frosted me. Making a claim in an article that these products killed people. Now, I don't deny that some people were injured by them. I don't deny that you couldn't have liver damage, heart attacks, and strokes. But, you know, I depend on the best source of information on poisoning that exists here in the United States, and that is the United States Poison Control Centers, We have an association of poison control centers, the American Association of Poison Control Centers, that does its report to the United States Congress every year. And there are 60 of these poison control centers all over the United States. You have one here, right here in Tallahassee. And so if you go to the AAPCC, the American Association of Poison Control Centers, and you look at their reports over the last 27 years, you will find out that they list 11 total deaths from nutrients. In 27 years, 11 deaths. But when you actually dive into the literature, what you find out is that the American Association of Poison Control Centers uses a four-point scale. It's called a relative contribution to fatality. A rating of one means it's undoubtedly responsible. Somebody picks up a can of drain cleaner and drinks it and it kills them, then it's a number one. It's undoubtedly responsible. Number two on the relative contribution to fatality chart means it's probably responsible. Number three means it's contributory. So when we hear of somebody that had too much to drink and then they took their tranquilizer and they never woke up, well, then that means it's contributory. It would be a number three. And number four means it's probably not responsible. So even though the person consumed that, it, you know, they likely the death was caused by something else. So if you examine the poison control data, where the most recent death, which was in 2006, showed up, that particular death was rated a four, meaning probably not responsible. So it actually negates the fact that they even put it on the report. Well, if you go back in the other years where the 10 vitamin fatalities existed, remember, this is over a 27-year period of time, there is no RCF rating for the substance that killed these people, even though the number is listed in deaths by vitamins. Sounds like a new horror movie. It turns out that there was no RCF. Well, that's in violation of their own criteria. And so since it made no relative contribution to fatality at all, then the substance didn't contribute to the death at all. So what that means is you have one case in 27 years that said, well, it's probably not responsible. What am I getting at? What am I getting at is that in 27 years, we haven't had anybody die as a result of taking a vitamin, a mineral, an enzyme, a homeopathic, or an herb, even these contaminated products. So, once again, I do not deny that there aren't contaminated products out there in the marketplace. And I think it's really tragic that somebody would be hurt by something that they thought was going to help them. But when we talk about deadly mistakes, the deadly mistakes in this country are made by medical errors. You know, when we begin to look at the statistics and take a review and a close reading of peer-reviewed journals and government health statistics, it shows that American medicine frequently causes more harm than good. The number of people having in-hospital adverse drug reactions to prescribed medicine is 2.2 million a year. Excuse me? Adverse drug reactions are 2.2 million in a year? That's a pretty astounding number. You know, we have to see that there are tens of millions of unnecessary antibiotics that are being dosed out in America. You go into a physician and go, and they give you an antibiotic. There are tremendous numbers of people who are hospitalized unnecessarily, operated on unnecessarily. And the healthcare expenditures in this country are the thing that Washington is squealing about. You know, healthcare expenditures are darn near 15% of the gross national product now. So when we look at death rates for treatments that are routinely administered. 2008 is the last year that we have stats for. We had 106,000 deaths as a result of pharmaceutical drugs given according to manufacturers' directions. And according to the United States Poison Control Centers, we had 497 deaths that were poisoning by pharmaceuticals. That's separate from people who had an adverse reaction taking them according to manufacturer's directions. So we're zero against 497 documented deaths by the American Poison Control Center. That's 70% of all the poison deaths in the United States were done by pharmaceuticals. And 106,000 people died in 2008, the last year we have statistics for, as a result of pharmaceuticals taken according to manufacturer's directions. I mean, this is screaming material. If 2.2 million people are injured every year by prescription drugs, and 7.5 million have unnecessary medical and surgical procedures performed every year, almost 9 million are needlessly hospitalized every year. And again, this comes out of medical peer-reviewed journals and government health statistics. Then we're talking about 750,000 people that die annually due to medical mistakes. 784,000 people that die according to medical mistakes. And yet, the New York Times and the Sarasota Herald will turn around and print a column by the reporter Natasha Singer, who didn't do a fact check to find out that, in fact, there were no deaths from any vitamin, any mineral, any enzyme, any homeopathic, any herb at all, period. In 27 years, where are the bodies? Where are the bodies? Where are these people that are dropping? Well, you know what? The American pharmaceutical industry is in trouble. And the American pharmaceutical, well, it's not the American pharmaceutical industry, it's the world pharmaceutical industry. You know, these kinds of attacks are going on all over the world. You know, in Germany now, they've banned virtually every medicinal herb and any vitamins that have potencies high enough to be worth taking. Germany is the biggest pharmaceutical nation in the world. Where do you think Bayer started? Australia is even banning some ornamental plants, including their state flower, because they have medicinal properties to them. In Britain, they're on the verge of banning calendula cream from shops. Flower cream. They're going to take it off the market. You know, the FDA just had a SWAT raid on a raw milk co-op. Excuse me? They run into a raw milk co-op with guns drawn? You know, the FDA has had a SWAT raid on a health food store, on food buying co-ops. You know, if you don't think that there is a worldwide move to control and prevent access to natural medicines and foods, wake up and smell the organic decaf. Because we are in the midst of a huge takeover of Big Pharma. Big Pharma is, you know, in trouble because 13 of its major 20 drugs that are sold around the world go off patent by the end of next year. This is huge cash. You know, Lipitor goes off patent. Lipitor is the single largest selling drug in the world. It goes off patent in October. That's a big hit. I mean, have you noticed how much vaccines are being promoted now? Why the heck do you think that all of a sudden we're getting all of this promotion for vaccines? It's because Big Pharma can't make money on the drugs anymore. Vaccines are pretty easy to develop. Testing them to demonstrate that they work or that they're safe isn't required. And the U.S. pharmaceutical companies have been protected from lawsuits with vaccine no matter how much harm they do. So even if you get a vaccine and your head rolls off, you can't sue anybody. It's becoming more and more difficult to avoid vaccination for those of you moms out there that don't want to vaccinate your kids or do what I recommend, which is just wait until their immune system is a little better developed. What is there for Big Pharma to do except to shut down its competition? And so you're going to continue to see these full-page plus articles. I mean, it was darn near a page and a half in the New York Times on a Sunday. It's astounding. The Sarasota Herald reported a shorter story. But when we begin to realize that getting a hold of accurate information about this is pretty tough, unless you listen to No Nonsense Nutrition and you listen to public radio, because the reason that I went on public radio and I left commercial radio was because when I said on a show one time something like, you know, eating burgers every day will rot your brain, that isn't the real quote, but you get the drift. You know, the owner of the station told me that the people that own the big burger chains here in Sarasota and Manatee County were sponsors on the show, and I couldn't say that on the show. That doesn't happen on community radio. It's the reason that you need to continue to support public radio and public television, public access for information. Because if I was on a commercial station, I couldn't do this. So when we look at the real statistics, that near 70% of all the poisoning deaths in America are caused by pharmaceuticals, that 106,000 people died in 2008 as a result of pharmaceuticals taken according to manufacturer's direction, and 497 people died in 2009 as a result of using pharmaceuticals as a poison, according to the United States Poison Control Centers, and zero deaths occurred as a result of dietary supplements, herbals, homeopathics, amino acids, etc., then you're going to understand who benefits from that kind of press. Big Pharma benefits from that kind of press. So as they try to continue to convince you that there is a pill for every ill, as they, the ubiquitous they, continue to try to convince you that using natural remedies are somehow dangerous or, you know, incomplete in some way, then just think about what you heard here on public radio. You know, this is Eve Prang Plews, and I'm happy to sign my name to this statement because, boy, did I get angry when I read that. So I appreciate you listening to my diatribe, and I hope that what it does is it wakes you up a little bit. It's kind of an unusual thing for me to make that strong of a comment on the show when what I've done fundamentally is dedicate myself simply educating you about taking better care of your health. But this is educating you about taking better care of your health, because you need to know who the enemy is. And the enemy is the pill pushers. And the pill pushers are not people like me who are trying to get you to take nutrients to support your health. The pill pushers are the pharmaceutical industry. When they come back and they say there really isn't a lot of proof, that was another statement that was made in this ridiculous article. Well, excuse me, rickets has all but vanished as a result of adding vitamin D in milk. Beriberi was eradicated by putting in vitamin B1. Scurvy has been eliminated as a result of using vitamin C. Folic acid added to our baked goods has reduced the incident of spina bifida, open spine, in infants by 36% just since it's been implemented. Niacin is used to treat everything from schizophrenia to high cholesterol. Vitamin E is shown to reduce the risk of heart attack. Vitamin B6 reduces the symptoms of carpal tunnel syndrome. Vitamin B12 reduces fatigue, even brings people out of dementia. Magnesium overcomes heart spasms. Calcium treats osteoporosis. Fiber helps to control blood sugar and improves digestion. Multiple antioxidant nutrients are prescribed to heal burns or prevent debilitation from HIV and other chronic conditions. You know, eye surgeons, when they lavage the eye, when they use fluids to irrigate the eyes during surgery, use glutathione, an antioxidant, to wash the eye out. Even the conservative National Cancer Institute and the American Heart Association now recommend foods and nutrients high in beta-carotene, vitamin C, and vitamin E to reduce risk of heart disease and cancer. Dermatologists sell you Retin-A a derivative of vitamin A to reduce skin and reverse skin aging. So when people say vitamins don't work, when people say that there isn't any proof, well, that's just the beginning of a very short list. You know, diseases start at a cellular level. The process called oxidation is believed to be involved in most forms of cellular destruction. Antioxidants are the antidote to oxidation. Anti-ox takes care of oxidation. The cells in the body can literally be destroyed when one of these free radicals, one of these unpaired electrons, runs around looking to get married, looking to find somebody to bond with. You know, these are atomic-sized kamikaze destroyers. But antioxidants work like Pac-Man. And, you know, I can't say that to teenagers now, because those of us that knew Pac-Man, we're a long way away from that in the gaming world. But antioxidants chew up free radicals. The body makes a lot of its own antioxidants, such as glutathione or coenzyme Q10 or superoxide dismutase. Those are all nutrients that require that you have enough of the minerals selenium and zinc, that you have vitamin B2, that you have amino acids like cysteine to help the body to produce these antioxidant enzymes. Some antioxidants are derived from your diet, such as vitamin C, vitamin E, vitamin A, bioflavonoids, etc. So all human disease is now believed to have some relationship with free radicals and oxidation. The oxidation process has long been studied in the human eye. And so I want to talk about eyeballs today. I want to talk about seeing. Many of you know I'm a passionate amateur astronomer. In fact, next Monday on Labor Day, I'll be teaching astronomy, Meet the Sky, out at Siesta Key Public Beach Access. I teach it once a month out there. And last month is the only month that we had to cancel a class because it was pouring rain. But even if there's only a piece of sky showing, I'm out there with the telescope. And, you know, as I got involved in astronomy and I met people that had fancier and fancier binoculars and fancier telescopes, and I started going to star parties and looking at people that had incredible amounts of equipment, and they would show you their new $350 eyepiece or their new $10,000 telescope, I realized that the single most important piece of equipment that I had as an astronomer was my eyeballs. Even if I have $100,000 worth of astronomy equipment, which I don't, if you don't have an eyeball to look through that eyepiece, well, it's all for naught. So I got interested in taking care of the eye a long time ago, and I want to thank Bill Sardi for helping direct me to information on the eye. Bill Sardi's kind of an interesting guy. He had a degree in literature, and, you know, that and $4.95 will get you a cup of latte, and he ended up working in for an ophthalmological company. And so when he sold them equipment, he grew up in a family that had a lot of interest in nutrients and vitamins, and he would say to these docs, oh, did you read the story about diabetes and vitamin C in the eye and blah blah blah? And he found out nobody knew anything. So Bill Sardi wrote a series of books called Nutrition in the Eye, where he took all of the things that had already been published about nutrition in the eye and put it in one place. He's not a clinician. He's not trained as a medical professional or as a biochemist. He's a journalist. But he put all this stuff in one place. And so I want to just give a thanks to Bill Sardi for pointing me in the direction of learning more about the health of the eye. Certain structures in the body can exhibit accelerated oxidation. The lungs are certainly one of them, simply because of the amount of oxygen that moves through there. Ultraviolet sun rays promote oxidation. When I went to Egypt way back 25 years ago, I was startled of the number of the felucca sailors, the sailboats that sail back and forth across the Nile, how many of them had cataracts? because they were exposed daily to the UV rays, not only coming down onto that desert land, but coming reflected back up off the water. The cornea and the lens of the eyes focus and intensify UV rays on the retina, and that's why it's important that you always wear sunglasses that are ultraviolet protected. The fluid level that fills the front of the eye, the aqueous part of the eye, has one of the highest levels of vitamin C in the body. The retina at the back of the eye is supplied with antioxidants from the bloodstream. But when the oxidation overwhelms the antioxidants, then cells are destroyed. And with age, the body produces fewer and fewer of its own antioxidants. So if you stare directly at the midday sun, the UV rays can oxidize the retinal cells in the back of the eyes in a few minutes, and you'll lose your central vision. But equally, you can destroy these retinal cells slowly over many years from low levels of sunlight or just a gradual reduction in this antioxidant defense system. I went to Siesta Key yesterday morning, as I often do, and we were chatting with a friend of ours out on the beach, and he wasn't wearing sunglasses, and all I could think about was, you shouldn't do that, buddy. You need to protect those eyeballs. But the bit that is really important in the maintenance of the eye are the omega-3 fats, the things that are found in fish oil and in flaxseed and in walnuts and in northern beans and in, you know, soy. Because Americans consume so many more saturated fats and cholesterol than Americans who lived 100 years ago, you know, and whether you're consuming your saturated fat because you're eating burgers or bacon or butter. A host of new diseases have showed up since we started eating so many saturated fat. And the new plastic fats, as I call them, the things that are found in margarines and egg substitutes and baked goods, it's easy to see why our blood vessels are lined with cholesterol and fats that lead to cardiovascular disease and heart disease, but they also really lead to eye problems, macular degeneration, glaucoma, temporal arteritis, just all sorts of eye disorders. These little teeny tiny blood vessels that are located in the eyes can become clogged with fat that result in eye problems before there's a problem elsewhere in the body. I did a class with Donald Rudin, a doctor who wrote The Omega-3 Phenomenon, probably 25 years ago. And he called omega-3 oils the nutritional missing link. And I really hung on to that term, the nutritional missing link. You know, Americans seem to be developing an aversion to fats during the 90s, but remember, there's good fats and bad fats. And the omega-3 variety of fats, the unsaturated ones, the ones that are liquid at room temperature, are kind of like antifreeze, just like they are in the fishes. Remember, when you eat a fish from the tropics, it doesn't have a high omega-3 count, like a grouper and a snapper. But when you eat cod and salmon and tuna and mackerel, things that are more common in the northern waters, well, there is a southern mackerel as well for you fishermen out there to correct me. But the further north they are, the colder the water is. And so water can actually be below freezing and still be liquid. Yeah, that's a whole other physics and water dynamics class. But suffice it to say, fish oil is antifreeze. You know, there's numbers of functions in the body, including the regulation of eye pressure, the constriction of blood vessels, the thinning of the blood, the moistening of the skin in the eyes, the spasm relieving, the reducing of sun sensitivity. All of those things can happen with omega-3 fats. You know, I was totally surprised the first time that I realized that dry eye and arthritis went together. Yeah. Did you ever know that? The very same thing that causes us to have dry eye in terms of membrane problems is the same thing that happens in arthritis. We got a membrane problem. A lot of dry eye sufferers have watery eyes and don't understand how their eyes can be running with moisture, and yet their doctor turns around and diagnoses them with dry eyes. We need to understand a little bit about the tear film. There are three layers of tears on the front of the eye. The oily layer is the outermost, and it's produced by glands that are located in the lower eyelids, and it reduces tear evaporation. The second layer is the aqueous layer, or the watery middle layer, which is the majority of the thickness of the tear film. And the tear layer is produced by the lacrimal gland, which is right underneath your eyebrow bone. This is the watery type of tear that is produced when we cut an onion and our eyes become watery. And then the innermost layer, which is called the mucin layer, and it's produced by cells that are in the clear coating over the white of the eye. They're called goblet cells. These three layers go together, the mucin layer, the aqueous layer, and the lipid or the fatty layer, to make the tear layer, the tear film, properly called, that's on your eyes. You know, if eyes are constantly watery, sometimes they just have a blocked tear duct. Well, these omega-3s, these fish oils and other omega-3 oils, and flax oil I would include in that list, are necessary for both the lipid layer and the aqueous layer to work right. And so dry eye is probably the most common of all eye problems. It's probably one out of every 10 people that I see in my clinic has dry eye. And if a client has arthritis, I can pretty well guarantee you they have dry eye, or if they have other autoimmune diseases. So we're not talking about Sjogren's syndrome, where dry eyes are accompanied by dry mouth, which is a very serious autoimmune disease, is most common among women after 40. And in my practice, an awful lot of women that have been using a tremendous amount of artificial sweeteners like aspartame are much more candidates for Sjogren's syndrome. And we have to remember that there are drugs that can interfere with tear production as well. Well, it turns out that the nature of omega-3s can often solve that problem. You know, I usually give people that combination of EPA and DHA. If you're a regular listener to No Nonsense Nutrition, you know that you turn over your bottle of fish oil and you add up the EPA and the DHA. We probably need somewhere between 1,500 and 2,500 minimum a day. And if you've got dry eyes, I'd give you 3,000 or 4,000 IUs of EPA. Milligrams of EPA and DHA for at least 6 weeks. And if your dry eyes weren't better at the end of 6 weeks, then I would add flax oil or borage oil into the mix. And if 6 more weeks went by and your dry eyes still weren't better, then I'd probably give you 25,000 IUs of vitamin A once a day for a month, because vitamin A is critical in creating the mucin layer of the eye. People that eat beta-carotene, when they have carrots and sweet potatoes and cantaloupe and papayas and apricots, that beta-carotene is supposed to turn into vitamin A, but some people have a genetic defect that doesn't allow them to convert beta-carotene into vitamin A very easily. Have you ever seen anybody who took so many vitamins that their skin got orangey? Doesn't happen often. I see about... I don't know, I've probably seen two of them in the last decade, but they're people that can't convert vitamin A, and so they need to take vitamin A supplementally. But we look at these conditions that happen with the eye, and we see that they're very much related to our antioxidant level. This is especially true of cataracts. You know, cataracts progress pretty slowly. They occur more commonly after age 60. They're much more prevalent after age 70. Night vision is diminished. Glare from oncoming headlights, you know, gets to be a problem. And so I see individuals that their field of vision can narrow, and it makes driving more hazardous because cataracts frequently develop in one eye first. The depth perception can be impaired, another driving peril, something to think about when that car is headed directly toward you. What we can see with cataracts, and we've seen it especially in developing nations, is that it can cause a false senility. Literally, we see individuals who have trouble distinguishing colors, trouble recognizing people. They appear to have a lapse in memory, but in fact, they just can't see. And they get injured more often. Slips and falls become more common. Even the smallest of cataracts can interfere with vision. Imagine a small pit in the windshield of your car. If it's located at the edge of the windshield, it doesn't cause any problems. But if it's located in the center of the line of sight, it can interfere with a clear view of the road. The same thing is true with cataracts. So when we look at the modern treatment for cataracts, the, you know, surgical removal, it's better than 95% effective in improving sight. The cloudy material is removed from the inside of the eye, and you replace the cloudy lens with a clear artificial lens implant. The most advanced method of this is done with an ultrasonic probe that actually emulsifies the cataract into tiny little bits, and then it's vacuumed out of the eye. It's kind of similar to sucking the contents out of a grape. A small sac remains, and inside this sac, this artificial lens is placed. But we may be able to prevent cataracts. We may be able to delay cataract surgery. You know, cataract surgery is the single most expensive thing that Medicare pays for. So if we just delayed cataract surgery by 10 years, we would save a tremendous amount of money in healthcare. Overall. So when we look at things like cataracts, we know that they never grow back after somebody's had a cataract removed. But we found out that people who take vitamin C have way lower rates of cataract, and cataracts show up much later. The nature of all of the cures that are talked about, well, you can't cure a cataract, or at least we don't know how now to do so. Even though there was that guy down in Miami who was using the sap from the sea grape tree and actually dripping it into his eyes and claiming that it, you know, ate up his cataract, not something I recommend. But cataracts can be prevented. You know, the antioxidant glutathione that I've talked about many times on the show, it's a sulfur-rich compound. It is the most important antioxidant in your whole body, and that's the reason that I tell you all the time to eat high-sulfur foods like eggs and asparagus and broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, bok choy, arugula, kale, onions, garlic, etc. Glutathione loss is found in every form of cataract that there is. It continually decreases in concentration in the lens of the eye from the time the baby is born. And so when we have more glutathione, we protect the eye. In the early days of the HIV explosion, we clearly saw that individuals who had high glutathione levels had low progression of HIV. Well, it turns out that they can test glutathione levels in the eyeball, and it was the best predictor of whether somebody would get a cataract. I don't even want to know how they do that, but suffice it to say, glutathione, high glutathione can prevent cataracts. Vitamin C can help to prevent cataracts. Cataracts are simply a lens that is starving for nutrition. Yes, you can measure glutathione with a blood test. But what we want to do is to try to keep our glutathione levels high all the time. I've recommended often a supplement called N-acetylcysteine, or NAC. NAC is one of the most important supplements to help your liver detoxify, and it's the important supplement that helps us to make more glutathione. But it appears that nature provides vitamin C in the aqueous fluid of the human eye to prevent oxidative damage that might result in premature cataracts. And so, yes, you can get vitamin C from green peppers and from citrus and from strawberries and from pineapples. You can get it in a mango. You can get it in a papaya. But you can also get it in a supplement. The level of vitamin C in the lens of the eyes is 30 times greater than it is in the blood. And so the higher the amount of vitamin C in the diet, the higher the amount of vitamin C in the lens of the eye. And as a result, it is much more difficult for the body to make a cataract. There is plenty of historical evidence that vitamin C can prevent cataracts. We can go all the way back to 1935 and read an issue of Science where they talked about high doses of vitamin C to work on already developed cataracts. So the older the patient was, the more difficult it was to improve sight. So that says now is the day. You're never going to be any younger than you are today. So getting more vitamin C is one of the ways that you can protect the eye against cataracts. Vitamin B2, riboflavin, is another protector against cataracts. It makes a very unusual substance that is necessary for the production of glutathione. And so flavine, adenine, dinucleotide. No, it doesn't roll off your tongue. But essentially, all you need to do is have some vitamin B2. And so back to my recommendation that you take a multivitamin every day, simply because of the fact that it will help you make more glutathione. So taking a daily multiple vitamin of virtually any kind slightly decreases the risk of developing cataracts. But taking a really high-quality multivitamin definitely reduces the incident of cataracts. And so we know that diuretics can worsen cataracts. You know, there's a lot of people that are on diuretics that are on high blood pressure medication. They may be on thiazide-type diuretics, and they wash soluble nutrients out of the body, such as vitamin C. Plus, diuretics are photosynthesizers. They can actually discolor the natural lens of the eye when the eye is exposed to sunlight. And so there are very many drugs that can worsen the development toward a cataract. There's plenty of drugs that are harmful to your eyes. There are drugs that can increase the eye to hemorrhage or cause damage to the retina or even can cause glaucoma or damage to the optic nerve. But the photosensitizing drugs, drugs that increase your sensitivity to sun, are the ones that absolutely make you more susceptible both to cataracts and macular degeneration. And those are things like antihistamines and birth control pills and tranquilizers and antidiabetic drugs and sulfa drugs and antidepressants and steroids. There's no question that prednisone will do it as well. So you say to me, well, Eve, I'm one of those people, I need to take an antihistamine every day because I'm allergic to cats. Then I suggest that we try Mother Nature's antihistamines like nettles and quercetin so that we do more to protect your eye. So there are drugs that can cause dry eye symptoms. Again, antihistamines and appetite suppressants and antidepressants and blood pressure medication, antibiotics. Some of those same things can increase light sensitivity. A lot of times, clients don't realize that the drug they're taking for one condition creates another condition. So that's just the beginning of information on nutrition in the eyes. I'd like to do another show on that and talk about macular degeneration and some of the other things that can happen to the eye, but I thought I'd get you started by helping you to understand the relationship of essential fatty acids and dry eye, and the relationship of vitamin C and vitamin B2 and cataracts, because you want to have good eyes so that you can pick up the paper every Sunday morning and read what's being said and find out whether it's true or not.